All right, this is a seminar on wilderness camping and wilderness experiences, and I want to share some things with you that I'm really excited about. Over the last several years, I've been getting into wilderness camping a lot more. I guess just to kind of give you a brief background of my experience in it, when I was in seminary, we had a high school ministry with some kids over at Atherton High School there in Louisville, and so we just thought, well, one day we'd take them out for a day hike over to a place called Red River Gorge, which is near Louisville, or near Lexington, about a two-hour drive over there. So we went over there, and I'd never done much hiking at all, but I heard about this place, and we got some maps that the Park Service put out and everything, and not Park Service, but the National Forest Service. And so we went hiking around, and we kept going, and it was getting late in the day, and we were kind of lost a little bit, temporarily disoriented, as I say. Daniel Bunyan's college says, somebody asked me if he ever been lost. No, I've never been lost, but I've been a mite bewildered for a couple days. But anyway, I was a mite bewildered, and this one girl was having some, she was sick, and was getting ready to get sicker, and we had to get out of there real quick, and I kind of figured that we were about right about where the car was, except we're about 500 feet below it. And we were down this valley, and it was up on this ridge on this cliff. So I took one of the guys, I said, Craig, come on, go with me. And we went up to try to find a way to make up to the side, up the side of this cliff to get to the top. And so we found a way to get by. I just counted you, Cloud. We finally found a way to get to the top, and so we went back down and told, got everybody else, and started going up there. And at one point, a guy had to hold onto a tree and was just laying out flat on the side of us, and then people crawled up him, you know. And we finally got to the top and just could see out all over the place, and it was just beautiful. And the fact that, you know, here we had to work with something together and pull the group together, the unity it brought with us, and think, well, we accomplished this, you know, this was really great. It really did something for these kids. These are the kids we've really been working with, our disciples in our group. And just something happened in that experience that I couldn't have ever planned, but it just kind of clicked. And so from that, we took a couple other day hikes, another one over there at Red River Gorge. Then I took them up into a cave up in Indiana one time. And that was wild. We went to the cave, and everybody just had flashlights, and we got up about waist deep in water, and one kid got scared and went running out of the cave, you know. And we couldn't go too much farther back because the water got too deep. And but just experiences like that was my first introduction to taking groups into the wilderness. For the last three or four summers now, since I've been in Macon, we've been taking groups into the woods. We took five trips this last summer to different things, backpacking, canoeing, and caving. And so I've gained a little bit of experience. I've read some on this. I've talked to a lot of people who do this in other places and other types of programs. And I've kind of come to my own theology and philosophy and the direction I want to go in this wilderness camping as far as a ministry. So I'm going to share that with you tonight. And I want to start out by giving you... I'll stop all questions and then move on. Now, you need to, first thing on the outline here, you really need to develop, why in the world are you going into the wilderness? What are you doing? I mean, it's just because you come to my seminar and you got so excited about it, you know, that you need to go out and do it. Well, I can understand that. I know that I'm the dynamic speaker that inspires you to move on, but if there might be one here who has not been so convicted that they need to go out into the wilderness, so here you need to kind of develop your own philosophy of wilderness ministry. And I've kind of thought through some of these things, and let me just share a few of the things with you that people have chosen as reasons to go into the wilderness. These first set here, the biblical models, you look up some of these scriptures and others I'm sure you could find. I have not done a detailed biblical study on this, but we find that God has spoken to people in a very unique way in their wilderness experiences. And I've just mentioned here Moses and the time he spent. He was being a shepherd, but he was out on the edge of the desert or the wilderness shepherding and spent years there. And that's where he met the Lord in the burning bush and told him to go to Egypt. Elijah, he went caving. So I find good biblical reasons for going caving. Everybody should go caving. John the Baptist says he grew up in the wilds, in the wilderness. And I'm sure because of his unique relationship out there in the wilderness, he developed this deep walk with the Lord. Jesus' wilderness experience, that of the temptation, was of course very significant in his life. And because of the time he spent in the wilderness, his confrontation with Satan there developed his sense of who he was and what his mission was through that temptation experience. One interesting study you might do, I mentioned in my group this morning, if you look up in the concordance, the word prayer and how it is used in the life of Jesus, or when it says Jesus prayed. And every time that it said Jesus prayed, it also says he prayed in the wilderness, or in the desert places, or in the lonely places, or something like that. He got away to pray. Now, we do know of times that it doesn't say he prayed, doesn't use the word pray, but, you know, like in the upper room, John 17, the prayer he gives there, the prayer on the cross. And obviously, by deduction, knowing our Lord, I'm sure he prayed more than about six or seven times that he records the prayers in the gospel. I'm sure he prayed more than that in his life. But it is interesting that the gospel writers and the people who gathered the material prior to the gospel writers that got it down to them, the thing they really remembered, at least probably the disciples, they remembered was the times he spent in prayer in the wilderness. And evidently it was a significant enough experience for our Lord to go to the wilderness, to get away from the crowd, to get away from the city, to get into the wilderness, to pray, and to spend time with the Lord, with his Father. Now this about Paul in the wilderness is kind of a little speculation of exactly where he was, and mentions in Galatians the fact he went to Arabia, which was a wilderness, desert-type area. We don't know that he really went to a town or anything, so it's quite possible he was away from a large city and at least was exposed to some of the more bare essentials of life. Okay, here's some things there from the biblical things. And theologically, if you want to kind of change to a topical reason, maybe going to the wilderness, there's a couple models you can choose there. That of creation, I mentioned here in Matthew 6, this of course is a passage where it says, if God so arrays the grass of the field, or the lilies of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, how much more will he do so for you? And the point I'm making is that because of our confrontation of our experience in the wilderness and viewing God's creation, we can relate to that and say, gosh, look what God has done. You know, how much more does he love me as I see that he's loved this little flower or this little bug, you know, or, you know, whatever it is that you're really looking at and getting into in the wilderness. It can be a model that we can use as far as ministry, relating that to wilderness experience. The redemption model, this Romans 8 thing, says a couple things about the wilderness. One is that the wilderness, or that our creation is groaning. It talks about the creation was groaned with the pangs of childbirth. And I was fortunate enough to be in the delivery room for the birth of both my children, and got to hear my wife's groans of the pangs of childbirth. And they were groans, and they were pain. And so Paul uses this expression to say, you know, the creation, even the creation is involved in this sin thing. And it's hurting. And I kind of make a little, maybe a exegetical jump to the whole ecological crisis of what we're experiencing today. And perhaps the creation is growing and is kind of getting us back, human beings, for what we have done in destroying the wilderness by the resources being deleted and not allowing us to make such use of the creation anymore. But to also involved in this, the sin, is a redemption. And Paul goes on in that passage to say, soon the whole, all creation is going to be involved in the revelation of the sons of God and this redemption. So this world, the creation, the whole thing is going to be redeemed. There will, of course, be a new heaven and a new earth. So we can see this as we go into the wilderness, almost see a model or see God's love in the creation, the sin that man has done, but the possibility of redemption in the future. This word purposeful models is something I just made up to kind of gather in the other reasons why people go into the wilderness, and I mentioned several here. One is for self-improvement. This kind of comes out of the idea that the army started, or the military, and that is of the confidence courses. You know, they have these obstacle courses, they call them confidence courses, and to build the confidence of the men that go through them, you know, climbing over these walls and, you know, swinging across these ropes and all this kind of stuff, to build up confidence in the individual. Well, there are a lot of groups who use this type of model. Outward Bound is one of them. Outward Bound, I don't have their address here, but their basic approach to it is that of building a kid's self-image, his self-concept, and getting to like himself by stretching the child, the student, to the limit. And because they're stretched to the limit, can find out that their limit is much farther than what they had originally thought of. And they give them a specific physical problem to deal with. Whether it's a group of eight kids and they got a 12-foot wall that they've all got to get over, and or whether it's a kid who is getting ready to rappel off a 100-foot cliff and needs to trust the guy who's got the belay rope to, if he were to fall, he's going to catch him. But he's the one that's going to have to make that step. And when he does it, knowing that it was he that did it, and builds his self-confidence. So this is one model that can be worked on, is Outward Bound. Anyone gone through an Outward Bound course? They've about developed a classic of wilderness experiences. It's a 3-week course that a kid goes on, and they're all over the country. There's a North Carolina Outward Bound, probably a Virginia one, I'd imagine. I know they're out west real big. There's one up in New York, and they do different types of things, but they've been the avant-garde. It's not a Christian group, but they've done a lot of real good things. The outdoor classroom is an idea I just picked up from a group called the American Wilderness Institute. There's a couple brochure things here you can get from them, this one here and this one here. This is a Christian group. The director, I talked to the director of this at the convention one time, and he basically has this kind of philosophy, is that they just transfer what you might teach in your church training group, or you might teach in your discipleship group, and all they do is just transfer that material into the woods, into the wilderness. And they teach the kids how to study the scriptures. It's basically their approach. Bible study through group interaction is a big terminology for it. And they teach the kids how to study the Bible. Well, it's the same thing you could use in, you know, in this building. But because they remove them to a different environment, the whole learning process is different. They feel really speeded up, and you're not so hampered by stereotypes of what we're doing here in the church, you know, or something like that. But they're in the woods and spending time in Bible study and teaching each day. So it's a whole new model. They do about 10-day courses, I think. There are people, by the way, that you can contract out to take your kids to them. And they'd supply all the equipment and everything. You have to be out in Colorado, by the way, but that's not a bad place to be. A recreational model. It's just fun to go into the woods. It's enjoyable. You can just go there for just the fun of it. And this is not a bad thing to do. Bad reason to go, but just enjoying being together. You don't have to have all these, you know, great ideas. You know, we're going to build the kids' self-concept, their concept of God, you know, and depth of the Bible, you know, and this is all going to be on a day hike. You know, you're going to do all this stuff. But, you know, there's times you can just go out and have a good time. And it's a good model you can work on. One that I've kind of opted for, I use a little bit of all these, but what I call the contemplative confrontation, and that's, I've never heard anybody use it before, but basically what it is, and I've got this through reading books like Walden, which is by Thoreau, and probably some of you read that in high school English, The Man Who Walked Through Time by Colin Fletcher. Colin Fletcher, who wrote another book here that I'll talk about later, took a 2-month trip by himself the length of the Grand Canyon. Never been done before. And very interesting how he did the thing. It's the canyon. The canyon walls give something like this. Here's the Colorado River here at the bottom. And the canyon walls will go up for a while and they'll go up. Different ages of the rock layers made these different lips. Well, he walked along one of these up here. It was too, the water, he couldn't get, you know, it didn't make a lot of river stream crossing if he was down at the bottom. So he walked along up here, and to prepare for his trip, there wasn't very much water, any water up here, unless it rained or snowed. And so he was waiting at the end of the canyon for a weather report, and found out the day it rained up in the canyon somewhere, that's the day he left, so he knew there'd be water pockets somewhere along there. He had a couple airdrops and a couple, he stashed food and water a couple times along the way. But he spent this 2 months basically by himself. He talked to one man, once, that someone that brought him some food down from the rim, and that's all the contact with humans he had. But this is basically a diary of a personal pilgrimage of a man, and that's what he calls it, the man who walked through time. And it really started me thinking about some possibilities of what happens when you just strip away the externals of our society. And that's basically what Thoreau says in Walden. He says when you reduce life to its simple essentials, we can discover what life is really all about. And so this is one of the things that I really like, the model I like to use in the wilderness, is trying to simplify things. Just get away from the TV, get away from the cars, get away from the radio. And the closer you get to the woods, the better the experience is. That's one of the reasons, too, why I don't take tents. You can get in that tent and you can zip it up, you know, everything's tight, you know, and you're indoors again. But you got a tarp, you know, and it's open on the ends, you know, and you always, and you make games about it, you know, who's going to have to sleep on the outside, you know, and you have a big drawing and stuff like that. Or nights when it's clear enough, don't even put the tarp up, you know, just lay out and sleep on it and look at the stars all night. But when you take all the externals away, you're reducing life to its simpler forms, and hopefully can come in contact with a little bit more of yourself and of God. And the contemplation aspect of it, I mentioned here a book by Elizabeth O'Connor, Search for Silence. And this has really helped me in my own understanding of prayer, contemplative prayer, and that of being able to meditate and to meet the Lord in almost a very intuitive way. I really don't want to get into the discussion of contemplative prayer that much, but this book could help you understand it if you're really interested in it. And I got a copy in the bookstore. I told Jim to pick up a couple, and there's some paperbacks over there, but they're $3.95 each. But it's great. You might not agree with all the theological assumptions that Elizabeth O'Connor has, but I think it's worth maybe working through. And it takes work. It has exercise in it, and it's a book you have to work through. You just don't read it. She does have one chapter in here on prayer or contemplation on the creation. I forget what the title of it is. But it talks about contemplative prayer in a created order. Kind of applies to going into God's creation, into the wilderness. One other thing that I mentioned, I might have mentioned in my seminar last night, a book that is not on your outline here, but A Serious Call to a Contemplative Lifestyle by Glenn Henson. This is more of an academic work discussing contemplative prayer, discussing meditation prayer, and he builds a case for it. He discusses our contemporary society, what's happening, quotes Alvin Toffler a lot, Future Shock, and then builds a theological system. He feels a good model for contemplative prayer. But anyway, if you want it, more of an academic study, it's not a devotional type book. The other one is a devotional book. This would help you, and it does have some things in here about practical aids to devotion. I'll talk in a little bit about how to work this in to your wilderness experience a little bit more. Any questions or comments on this first section here? Developing the philosophy or the theology of wilderness camping. You need to really think through that. Why in the world are you going into the woods? And you really need to think through to convince your pastor that you need to take the kids out there, especially if you're going to go to it in any depth. And you need to convince yourself, too, because it's going to take some time. especially when you're first getting into it, you wouldn't believe how much time it takes to get pull these trips together, getting the equipment together and the food and everything like that. But, you know, it's kind of like Ralph and I was talking about this morning, knowing that God has called you to do this, be real certain of it, search the scriptures and know what you're going in there for. And then when things get rough, you'll know, you know why you're doing it. Okay, steps to wilderness camping. Read, read, read. Reading is just, boy, you can find out a lot of stuff. And just read everything you can get your hands on. It can help you a lot. You'd be surprised how much you can learn from reading. It doesn't make you an expert in wilderness camping, but boy, it can really help you go a long way. And I mentioned here, probably the best book, everybody would say the best book, on wilderness camping, particularly backpacking. This is particularly geared for backpacking, is The New Complete Walker by Colin Fletcher. And just chock full of information. He uses brand names, tells you, you know, what brands are good, what's not so good, what you want to look for. There are a couple problems with it. One is he lives and works out west, and the gear he recommends sometimes is not necessarily good for here in the east or in the northwest up there in Washington, Oregon. The reason is because it tends to be drier out there out west in Colorado, California, where he does most of his walking. And so, like when he recommends a down jacket, well, down's really not that good to have here in the east. It's much better to have something like Polar Guard. So you need to kind of watch that, but it is got some great information on snake bites, and it's got some scary stories about snakes, and then blows them all up as myths, you know, and says, don't worry about the snakes. And he tells a story in there about the time he was camping there in the Grand Canyon and was sleeping on an island there in the middle of the river. One time he got down to the river and was laying there, and he saw this big 6-foot rabbit just crawl up right next to him, and he just laid there still, didn't move. And the snake just curled up there and then just threw its head back and just opened its mouth and yawned real big and laid its head down and went to sleep. And this is a quote out of The Man Who Walked Through Time. He just talks about how, you know, for a brief moment there, he felt like he could really identify with the creation, you know, with nature in a way. Here he was, him laying there sleeping on that island, and that snake just crawled up right there next to him. He did mention later on he had to kill one of those snakes, so because it kept coming back to his campsite, he couldn't get rid of it. So anyway, that's the land of that thing. Backpacking One Step at a Time. This book now is available in paperback, and it goes through just all the basics. Has some beautiful color pictures in the front too. I don't know if the paperback has the color pictures or not, but anyway. Where is the contents? There it is. How to walk, horsing on the pack, sleeping, eating, bugs, beasts, and serpents, danger, assembling the outfit, boots, clothing, etc. Route finding, when the way gets rough, suffer the little children, on into the winter, and the new epic. Real good. Only thing that cost me about this is written by a company who makes equipment, and so they happen to recommend their equipment along the way, Recreation Equipment Incorporated. You might want to get that, and it's cheaper than the Complete Walker when you get it in the paperback. So if there is one book you want to get, you might want to get that one.
If you find the REI equipment cheaper and better
quality? Not as good a quality, cheaper, yes. And I have had some REI packs have recommended them. We'll talk about equipment in a little bit and remind about that, and I'll talk about different brands and stuff in a few minutes, okay? You need to get some training in taking kids into the wilderness. I mentioned here Rec Lab, that the Recreation Sunday School Board, the Recreation Department puts on. They have a section on camping, and has a pretty good program in it, and they have started doing some wilderness camping in their Rec Lab. You need to find out exactly what they're doing, but they can give you a good basic training in it. I mentioned here Wolf Creek Wilderness. I gave their address. I only have a few brochures from them. You can pick them up, and this thing here is a fact sheet about another wilderness experience that they do. A lot of different things they do, and there's just one of them, but you can have it because somebody really gets it. But Wolf Creek has done more to influence me than anybody else. And this, they're located in North Georgia. They're not a Christian group, They came out of Outward Bound. They see themselves as a wilderness school. They're teaching people how to lead people in the wilderness. And they do all kinds of different things. But they have like four-day leadership seminars. You go there for 4 days. You'll spend 2 days at their lodge learning all kinds of stuff, first day logistics, food, and then you'll spend 2 days in the woods. They might take when I went, they spent one night backpacking and one night canoe camping. And so you learn a little bit of things. I also went to a two-week instructor's course that they had, and we did canoeing and caving and rock climbing and all kinds of different things. And we put together a trip ourselves and learned how to do a lot of logistics and map and compass. And it's really good to get together with folks that, man, they really know what they're doing. These guys, they had probably 100 years of experience together in the resource people that were there. So you need to know some of these people, and you need to get yourself some experience. Now, perhaps you can get it from just somebody else in your church that really knows what they're doing. But do it. Don't just go out there and read a couple books, you know, and just go out and go backpacking. You might have a good trip, and it might be real safe, but it's just that possibility that something can happen that you can't handle, that you didn't have the experience for, or if something you had known about, you could have prepared for. One thing I've learned from, just as an example, one thing, great fear I have in the wilderness is that a kid might get a bee sting. And, bee sting, I'm worried about snake going out. Well, I think I can handle a snake, but if a kid got a bee sting, went into anaphylactic shock, I'm not sure that I could really handle it. I could do the best I could, but somebody could die easier from a bee sting than a snake bite. And I would have known that had I not gone to this course and just gone, you know, maybe your average first aid course and gone out to the woods, or at least I've got some Benadryl and a first aid kit that might help save somebody's life. And it can be, that's something to be sold over the counter, and you can't get sued from using it now. But anyway, that type of thing, you really need to be trained by some experienced people if you're going to go into this in any detail. Or have some experienced people come with you on the trip. Got a doctor in the church that likes to do it, get them to come along. And you won't have to do as much training as you might otherwise if you're going to lead a trip yourself. I just mentioned Wolf Creek because I know them. I've gained a lot from them. I went to a medical emergency seminar with them this last spring. And they're located in Georgia, but people come from all over the Southeast to get training from them. We had a bunch from this last course I went to, a bunch from Washington, D.C. came down. And so people come from all over the place because they just know what they're doing. And they do it. They do a real fine job of putting it together. Okay, experience is the next thing that you really need to get to before you start taking people into the woods. And I mentioned there are personal trips. Plan some trips with somebody who knows a little bit about what they're doing. Or if you want to go ahead and take your own life in your hands, go out by yourself, you know. And if you do camping like in the summertime and it's not going to get that cold, you might get wet, you're going to survive. It's not that big a deal. And you might could go out and do some backpacking by yourself. When I got my mind set on, I wanted to start doing backpacking, I talked to a guy in the church who said he wanted to, and I called his bluff, and I said, look, let's go, you know, May the 1st. So I said, okay, so we got backpacks together. None of us had been backpacking before, but I want to prove to myself that I could spend the night in the woods and survive, and I could use a map and compass and go cross country. And we did both of those, and we came out okay. And so it gave me a lot of confidence in knowing it was possible. And in that same time frame, I was planning several trips that I was going to be personally involved in, but also going with Wolf Creek and other people and do some more experience, and planning trips that I had. Some of Wolf Creek people came with me. And so there's a lot of things you can do to gain experience on your trips. I mentioned there about trips with guides. You don't have any experience, but Mac was just telling me they're going up to, coming up here in North Carolina to go on a trip. And they've got some Christians there in Titusville who do a kind of wilderness camping thing. And so, you know, they don't have to worry about it. They've got people that know what they're doing. They've got the technical experience. They know the first aid. They know where they're going. And Mac and them just got to get the kids and the money together, and that's it. And so this is a real help to you when you're first getting into it, to get some professionals to help you. And I mentioned just a couple here. Wolf Creek will do particular trips. They're doing less and less of this, doing trips. this Rocky Mountain Expedition, I had a brochure on those. Wilderness Southeast will do, there's a brochure here from them they do, and you can get one of these. This is an old one, but they have, this is 75, 76, but it kind of gives you an idea of the type of thing they do. And they come up and do the Smokies too. Nantahala Outdoor Center, this, well, right here, these are from them. They do a lot of rafting. They will guide horseback trips, backpacking trips, things like that. They're located in North Carolina. They do the rafting on the Chattooga River, and they will do camping trips with you on the Chattooga, things like that. One thing about these groups, and the Christian groups too, they're very expensive usually. Might cost you per kid. Well, a canoe trip is especially expensive. A weekend trip canoeing with the guide service providing the canoes, but not the camping gear or the food, might cost you about $40 a kid, $40 a person. It's worth it because I put one trip together where I had to borrow canoes and shuttle cars and do all this, and it's pain. And I don't do canoe trips anymore because it's pain. But it's expensive. Yeah.
Do you know the Buffalo River in Tennessee?
Never met it.
It's a pretty good river to do canoe camping on.
Uh-huh.
It's about 120 miles off the scenic river in Tennessee.
Mm.
About 50 miles southwest of Nashville.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of good canoe outfitters there, and one man that I've been associated with, I've taken a couple of trips up there with him.
Uh-huh.
And he's very reasonable, about $11, $8 a day, I believe.
For renting a canoe?
For renting a canoe, and he'll, for carrying you wherever you want to go. And he knows the river really well.
Uh-huh.
And it's a safe river, too. It's not, there's a few shoals, but it's not anything dangerous.
Uh-huh.
And so,
yeah.
You can take people, I took people who had never been in a canoe before.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Yeah, you can find in flatwater rivers, things like that. You don't have to have a guide along, but to pay for the expertise of the guide and everything, it gets right expensive. I mentioned a couple Christian organizations here: Summit Expeditions out in California, Christian High Adventure is Southern Baptist Convention. They really pulled it off. If Richie could have done this, we'd be in good shape. But they're sponsored jointly by the Home Mission Board, the Sunday School Board Recreation Department, and the Brotherhood Commission. And so I just saw this. I was over in the lobby there in where we're staying, and I saw this on the cover, and it's a picture, and there's an article in here about Christian High Adventure. Chuck Clayton is the guy that directs it. There's a good article here, day by day, what they do on their trips. They work a lot out in Colorado, but they do trips in the East also. And it'd be the type of thing you send your kids to. It's like a 10-day thing for like $125 or something like that. They provide all the equipment, technical gear, things like that. But anyway, there's an article in the Home Mission Magazine on them. And I've not met the guy personally yet, but they really look like they know what they're doing. He's had a lot of experience. And I'm sure it seems like a real reputable thing. They also have training courses too, by the way. I didn't mention that up here, but they do like a 2-week leadership thing, and will train you in some things. And they're definitely Christian, and would help you in facilitating a Christian experience. American Wilderness Institute, I already mentioned, and there's some brochures here from them. And the name that I got from Mac here in Florida, the Lynx. LYNX. If you want to write that in there, Rudy Moberg and nice that you can write in care of the church, Park Avenue Baptist Church, 2600. Is that what you said? 2600. 2600 Park Avenue, Titusville. But anyway, they guide trips. Their big thing is canoe trips, though, isn't it? They don't do backpacking.
No, they don't do backpacking.
They don't do backpacking, but they do canoeing.
Yeah,
they're out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alrighty. Okay, that's gaining some experience. Now, planning to get you some experience is what I meant by this planning here. I've already kind of hinted at this, but go ahead and maybe look at your calendar and say, you know, I want to spend 10 days in the wilderness between now and next summer so I can take some kids. I'll feel comfortable taking some kids into the woods and sit down and, you know, pick out the days. You know, take some vacation days and maybe go backpacking or go up to a Wolf Creek or go somewhere else and spend a couple nights out. But plan ahead on that, because it doesn't just happen. It takes a lot of planning to do one of these trips, and you need to look, get your calendar cleared and plan on doing it. You really need to work toward that. Okay, that's gaining experience, or gaining steps to wilderness camping. The next thing over here is the types of wilderness experiences that you can have, and these are just suggestions. It's as wide as there is a wilderness area, really. Car camping would be a good way to start. Now, you all can do that right away. There's very little danger in car camping. You've got your car there. You know, this doesn't mean you go to the state park and you set up your tent and everything. And your TV set and all this stuff, you know, it's just car camping. Well, you know, if something happens, you can put them in the car and rush them to the hospital, and, you know, very little danger in that. And so it's something you can get into without hardly any trouble at all. You find a couple people in the church got tents, you know, and ask to borrow them and things like that, and you can do that right away. Some of our best trips we've done car camping. Like I mentioned that one about where the kids are at Cloudland Canyon. It was a car camping trip. And you can take larger groups car camping, too. We took 20 kids on that trip. And we split them up during the day. We took half of them. I took half of them caving. The other half went hiking. We, you know, switched them around to the other half caving. It's a real good way for you to get used to being in the wilderness, going to the state park and just getting used to your equipment and used to sleeping on the ground and things like that. And the kids, it's a new environment. Then most state parks, most state parks have a group camping area that's separate from the regular campers, and they usually no cost to groups. Also, usually no facilities. You know, there's maybe a pit privy or something like that. There may be some water, but no showers, anything like that. So it can be a real good experience. Make sure you know where they have a group camping area. They got the one state park one time. We set up camp and everything, and luckily they didn't have many people staying there that night. The ranger said that where they do. The lady who checked us in should not have allowed us to stay there. They don't allow groups to camp. It's only families. And so make sure when you, you know, don't plan your whole trip around this one state park and you get there and say, nope, sorry, and you can't stay. Okay, the next thing, I guess, up in difficulty is backpacking. I build most of my program around backpacking. It's simpler to do. The kids, you get them to get their own equipment, and you might have a few packs around, but they outfit themselves. It's very inexpensive as far as the church to get into if the kids are going to buy their own equipment or have their own equipment. And it's just, it can be a great experience. You find some places to go, or you got, you know, a large distance where you can see all over the place, or stream crossings, or beaches, or whatever, you know. Backpacking, I just love it. And it's a good group thing. It's simple to do, and something you can put together without too much trouble. Spelunking or caving, need a little more expertise for that. You'll need some training. You'll need to find some people who know cave. If you are going to do any caving, you need to check out the caves before you go in there and know what it's like, know the hazards, know how to find the way, little things like that are important. Most all these things, and I mentioned this in caving, but most all these things, well, before you ever take a group of kids there, you really should have checked out the area first. I know it pretty well. Have done a recon trip. And, you know, it's a good way to say, you know, Pastor, before I take the kids out to the wilderness, I need to check out these places. So, you know, you take out a couple days and go up and check out these places. And if you're going to do it right, you really do need to know what you're doing. You need to know... I'll talk about safety things later, but you need to know the area. You need to know where you're going. You might get to an area and you find, God, there's just nothing there at all. You know, it's really a waste to have come here. And so don't waste your time and the kids' time on a trip when you could have avoided that had you gone there earlier and checked it out. I took a group of kids this summer, a place Well, I've been in the area before. We hiked some of the trails, but there was one spur trail that went about 4 miles up to this other place called Cold Mountain. And so I said, well, let's go up there and see what that's like. And I had never been on this trail. And we got there, and there was nothing. It was rugged. It was really not very pretty at all. And so we came back again the next day. Of course, I guess we had kind of experienced along that thing. We found a dog while we were out there. He'd been out in the woods for about a week. And we kept the dog along with us the whole way and found his owner when we got back to town. It was quite a thrill. Anyway, we would have never found that dog. Canoeing. Canoeing's fun. Like I said, it can be expensive. If you're going to buy the equipment, it's extremely expensive. You get a good whitewater canoe, it's going to cost anywhere from $350 to $400, $500 a canoe. And you can understand why they cost a lot to rent when you're... It costs that much to buy, but it's a great, thrilling experience if you can afford, or your kids can afford to pay for somebody to give you a good whitewater trip, a whitewater canoeing trip, 3 or 4 day thing. It'd be a great experience for them. Rafting, another thing that you can, someplace you can rent rafts. I'm thinking about doing a trip next summer of renting some rafts and going up to a simple whitewater river. Rafts are a lot safer because they don't seem to turn over so quickly. And so you can maneuver those. They can be maneuvered pretty well, but it's just a lot of fun. You get put more people in, you know, and do a raft trip. Rock climbing, extremely technical, but again, teaches a lot of values about trust, being able to trust a guy that's got that belay rope, that he's holding on to you, that you know if you were to fall, he's got you. And, when you really get into this, the people who do a lot of this stuff, they teach the kids to belay. They don't just have the leaders to belay, but the kids do it too. And you've got, you know, maybe a kid you hate up there is supporting you, and you've got to have to learn to like that guy, you know. And so it can, there's a lot of lessons you can be built into rock climbing. And the most of the classic organizations like Outward Bound and the Christian High Adventure and the American Wilderness Institute and all these people, Summit Expedition, rock climbing is the basic thing that they use. But again, it's highly technical. To pay someone to come and do that, it can get expensive. And for you to do it, you need a lot of training. Don't just go one time and think you've got it down. But you do need to know it. And I wouldn't do it unless you've had some training in mountaineering, emergency mountaineering first aid. What if you got somebody that fell on the rock and is hung up there, you know, 100 foot above the bottom? What are you going to do? And I don't know what to do. That's why I don't do it. Okay. This is something I've never gotten into, snow or winter camping type stuff, cross-country skiing and snowshoeing. Most recent issue of Backpacker Magazine had a couple things on cross-country skiing. One thing was how it's better for you than jogging as far as build up your heart and everything. There's also an article in there about a guy who was a snowshoer. He says he was a cross-country skier for 5 years and never wants to have another ski on his foot again. You know, he snowshoes everywhere. So it's something I'd really like to get into, but we don't have that snow in Georgia, so I haven't done it yet. Okay, facilitating the wilderness experience. Involve the students in the planning of the trip. Now, I basically kind of choose where we're going, what we're, you know, itinerary and things like that. But when you get down to time to plan food and stuff like that, mainly food is where I involve the kids a lot. I get them involved in it. And sometimes helping buy the food. But just that they're involved in it a little bit. The not only pruning, but also we have an equipment meeting like maybe a night or two nights before, afternoon or whatever, before our trip, give all the food there, and, you know, and all the kids involved in packaging it, because you need to get everything out of the package and put them in new things and get them ready to go on the trip. And this just kind of gets the kids involved in it. They're doing it. And also, it's a ton of work for me to do. When I first started doing it, I was doing everything, you know. I mean, I was packaging food, and I was buying food, and I was planning, and I was cooking it. And yeah, you know, this has been fun. This was one of the times, one of the first trips I did was a canoe trip in the Okanoke Swamp, and I had a guide from Wolf Creek Wilderness there with me. And after the trip, we were riding back home. I said, well, you know, what kind of advice did you give me? He said, well, look, you just work too hard on this thing. Divide the group up into food groups. Let them do the cooking, the cleaning up, all the stuff. Just don't worry, you shouldn't have to do a thing, you know. So I hadn't done a thing since then. No, it's still a lot of work, but boy, you can really be surprised what the kids can do. You know, just show them a little bit about how to get the water on the stove, you know, and how to cook up the noodles or whatever, and the clean up and things like that, and they can handle it. So involve them, and I meant there about assigning tasks, cooking, setting up tents. There's tarps. This is one good thing I like about tarps. You can do all kinds of different things with them. Was the one who developed this idea, and it's used a lot now in outdoor education by camps and people like Wolf Creek and stuff, and it was Wolf Creek that put me onto these. They have a lot of ideas about different things you can do. You read them, they sound real stupid, you know, act like a duck and walk through the creek and stuff like that. But, you know, you're trying to get the people to understand, you know, what the environment's all about, and get them to look at the small things. And I've done a thing where you just take a like a little hoop of string or something like that, and they throw it out and you tell the kid, you know, look, that's your little world. I want you to just concentrate on study and see what's in there, you know. And they find out all kinds of things about it that they never thought of before. So anyway, environmental awareness, being aware of what's going on around them and their relationship to it. Another thing on the trip, native foods. I'm not really into that this much. I don't know that much about you know, living off the land. The one thing I really can do is I can cook up some sassafras tea, you know, and I'm in the mountains, you know, I'll find sassafras and get the kids together, so I'll go out and get sassafras, and you know, we'll pull up the roots, you know, and go clean them up, and then around the campfire we'll boil up some sassafras tea and get some brown sugar and honey and put with it. It's just, it's great. And, you know, it's just kind of a little neat thing to do. If you know more about that type of thing and you could get into it, how to, you know, pick mushrooms and stuff like that, you can, but I just don't, and I hadn't really worked on it that hard. Require journals and New Testaments. This is when I give a packing list. I probably should have brought some of those for you to see, but send out a packing list, and one of the things on there, bring a journal or a notebook and a New Testament, and all the kids are to have these, a pen or a pencil for them to write with, and I always bring probably an extra one or two on the trip. Let me give you, go ahead, would you hand one of those out there, buddy? You can keep this. This is something I developed this year to help me in helping the kids through quiet time experiences and things like that. And if you've ever done any serendipity stuff, you'll recognize some of this junk. This is not a substitute for a journal. It's an aid to the journal and to the wilderness, or to your spiritual times and the trip. That 6B there said provide for time alone. Now this is something you really need to plan for. And what I like to do it is to in the mornings, well in the evenings, you get in, you set up camp, and depends on what time you get into camp, but go ahead and get it set up, eat around 5 o'clock. In the summertime you got a long time anyway because daylight savings time. Eat around 5 o'clock and get everything cleaned up. And you've still got a couple hours of daylight, you can give kids a good hour of quiet time and some group time, or maybe an hour of quiet time and about half an hour in group time while it's still daylight. And then you can just have fun, you know, around the campfire and just relax together or hit the rack if you're really tired. So I like to get into camp early enough so you have a lot of daylight time. You can get all your cooking and cleaning up done in the daylight. It's really tough when it's dark. And then in the morning, get up and cook your breakfast and get it all cleaned up. Get your camp picked up. Tell the kids, pack your Bibles and your journals and your notebooks near the top of your pack, or just leave it out. Pack everything up and just get everything ready to go. And if it's not raining, you can do this. Get everything ready to go. And then, after you got everything ready to go, then you have your quiet time. So the kids aren't worried about, you know, do I have everything packed or something like that. Well, don't even start the quiet time until everybody's ready to go, and all they need to do after the quiet time is put their Bible in there and put their packs on their back and go. And so, you know, you might not get away from camp until 11 o'clock after you've done all that. It takes a lot of time to break camp. And you can facilitate this and make sure you give the kids some time alone. This is very important. This is my personal approach to it. I really see a need for a lot of time alone. Now, I mentioned a couple things here. Or let me go ahead and talk about this here in your daily quiet time thing. All I did, and I borrowed some stuff from Lyman Coleman, some group building things that we could do. I usually do that the first night, you know, just have them do these silly things together. Some reflection questionnaire on Bible study type thing, different Bible study stuff, a picture assignment there, you know, which kid do you identify with? And they choose a kid and they tell why. You know, serendipity stuff, I'm sure. Page 6, let's see, page 5 and 6 there talks about depth sharing sessions, and that's different stuff you can do with different scripture. Page 6 there, a guide to meditation, how to meditate on scripture, and then different suggestions. And I'll usually, like, get the kids together and say, okay, now, get your notebooks, turn to page 6, and I go over the instructions on how to do a scripture meditation, and then say, all right, tonight we're going to do Ephesians 4, 15, and 16, and meditate on that and work on your journal on it, and we'll get back together and study it. It's really helped. I got some songs in there for group worship, and the last page is on journaling, journal exercises. This book has really helped me this summer because all I had to do, I took time at the beginning of the summer to plan the whole thing out, and then all I had to do was pass them out to the kids, and 5 minutes before our group time, I could choose what we're going to do. Whereas normally I'd have to take time before each trip to think through some things, I need to get something mimeographed off, I need to get that done, or whatever. So it really was a help to me to put this book together, and it might be for you. I found things, this is another thing, things just don't happen like that. Maybe they do with you as far as spiritual stuff and putting it in the kids' lives. You know, I don't have to just go around and say, look, a rock. And that reminds me, Jesus is the rock of our salvation. You know, you ever thought about that? You know, it doesn't come so natural to me. I just can't do that. And maybe I should be able to, but I don't. And so this has helped me a great deal. But I mentioned there about walking, when you're on a trail that you know is safe, and tell the kids, let's walk alone for a while. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to start out first, and when I just get out of sight, just out of sight up here on the trail, somebody else start walking. We'll just kind of walk slow, and then the regulator, you know, say, whoever it is, you know, Jane or whatever, you know, you'll come, just bring up the rear. And but don't walk together, don't talk to each other, but just walk alone. And kids love it, and it's great. You know, I love it. To just walk silently, and hear the woods, and think, and pray if you can, or whatever. But walking alone. Canoeing, it's great if you don't have a whitewater river. It's a flat river, like when we're in the swamp. Do the same thing. Let the canoe ahead of you get out of sight. Because one thing I found in kids in canoes, man, races and ramming each other, you know, and water fights, and it's fun, but you're not getting much out of the wilderness experience, you know, when it's a constant battle, you know, and the wildlife's just going everywhere, you know, you never see anything. But the one time we were in the swamp, and we started out in the early morning, boom, we just saw birds and gators and everything, because we just took it easy and took it slow. A solo experience, the real classic solo that was developed, I don't know, I guess by Outward Bound, is a 3-day solo. And what that is, you place a kid in the woods, and you say, now you prepare them for it. And then this is on a 3-week expedition they've been on. So it's not just, you know, all of a sudden you take kids out 3 days and put them in the woods by themselves. It's not a survival thing to see if they can get along by themselves, but it's a time alone with God. Or, you know, not what Ben wouldn't call it with God, but I'd call it with God. It's a time alone. And you put them in the woods. And you say, now, as far as you can see, just these trees right here in this general area, maybe 100 feet, this is your area. And you put them next to a creek or give them enough water. And some groups, they do it this way. They say, don't take any equipment with you, or maybe take a sleeping bag or just a tarp or whatever, but just but take your journal and your New Testament, and you just, you know, you just be right here. And spend some time, and to start the solo, you need to kind of brief the kids and talk to them about what, you know, maybe some things you've seen in their life that you really need to deal with in these 3 days. So they're there for 3 days. Now, you need to check on them. You probably give them a whistle, you know, to blow if they need help and if they want to get out of it, or if something's wrong, emergency. But they're not going to be traveling anywhere. They're really, they're not going to get hurt. They're going to be okay. It's a fast. They have no food. Wolf Creek Wilderness does it. They give the kids a candy bar, but they tell them to bring it back at the end of 3 days. And but this is the classic solo experience. Now, you can do anything from an hour to 3 days. And I love these solos and caves with kids. And you take their lights away, you sit them down, and you talk to them about it. You take their lights, and or you ask them to give you their lights. And it's kind of a commitment. They give you the light, you know. And they're just there alone. And I've done this for as long as an hour and a half. I've thought about doing an overnight solo. I haven't gotten to that point yet. But give them the time alone. And boy, I'll tell you, when you're there and there is, I mean, there's no light. There's sounds. You know, it's a really neat experience. And I love cave solos. And the kids get a lot out of it, too. You need to debrief them when you go pick them up from the solo. See what they've done, what they've been dealing with. Pray with them. You know, just comfort them. I had one girl just break out in tears on it. I can't catch her before she panicked and left the cave. Personal confrontation, I just kind of hinted at. One thing I like to do is spend at least once on the trip, even if it's like a 2 or 3 day trip, 10 or 15 minutes with each kid. And the best way to do this, I found, is like during a quiet time. Say, tell the kids, tell them all this. During this quiet time, I'm going to come around and just sit down with you and talk to you for just a few minutes with each of you. And no big deal, you know, I'm just going to come and talk. And so you go down, maybe there's a kid that's a non-Christian, you know, and you get a chance to share with him and see what he's been dealing with in his life. There's one of your disciples, you know, where are they at? It's a real time I like to really affirm the kids in that time. I've done one thing once, a couple times. Say, I'm gonna give you a gift when I come to talk to you. And I want you to think about a gift you can give me, you know, a gift of caring, a gift of happiness. You know, rather than saying, look, you're sad all the time, give them a gift. And God might give me ugly looks back there. I've got another minute and I'll finish this outline. But anyway, take personal time with kids. Pray with them. You know, be personal with them. Hold their hands or whatever. Just be real friends to them. Group unity. I mentioned Serendipity books and the stuff I put in there already from Serendipity. Ethics. A lot of people are calling it a new land ethic. It's something you really need to be aware of. You get it in a lot of these books, Colin Fletcher and the Backpacking One Step at a Time. One thing that's an ethical thing with me is the size of your group, especially in wilderness camping. A good rule of thumb is 10 to 12 people and no more. You get out in a wilderness campsite and you can just destroy it by so many people walking around and leaving waste and stuff like that. It's not, the wilderness can only handle so much. If so many people are going into the woods, you need to watch out how many kids you take, how many people you take. Group size. Some people have hang-ups about building fires. It doesn't bother me that much. I still find enough firewood around, but fires versus stove. The noise level, sometimes you are camping at campsites where other people are. And they're out there to get away from all the noise. And so watch your kids on that. A lot of other things. Just be aware of the ecological impact that would be made with what you do. Okay, where to go? There's a lot of things here. I've got a few of these things here, outdoors in your southern national forest, to give you an idea of national forests you can go to. National parks, state parks. Read outdoor periodicals. I've got a backpacker up here and you look at. Your state parks probably put out a thing that tells about all the state parks and everything going on in the state. There is a publication in Georgia called Brown's Guide, which has led me to more things to do in Georgia than anything else I've ever found. And they're branching out a little bit and doing it. Every once in a while you'll see an article in something in Tennessee or Alabama or Florida, North Carolina. They're doing a little bit right around the state of Georgia, but helped me a great deal. Find out other places to go. Talk to wilderness people, outdoor people, outfitters, guide service people. Write Sierra Club, National Audubon Society. Find out if there's some of those people in your area. Appalachian Trail Conference. Colin Fletcher has a whole list in his book of outdoor groups. Equipment, REI, I mentioned the recreation equipment. You can mail order. I mail order about everything because there's not a backpacking store in Macon. And you can probably save some money by mail ordering. I mentioned here, one thing I do want to mention in connection with this, if the kids are going to buy the equipment, or get their own equipment, you need to see that equipment before you get out on the trail with it. And you need to check out that it's adequate equipment. Too many times, and I did it some this last summer, and I kick myself every time I do it, the kid says, look, I've been in Boy Scouts, I've been backpacking, you know, this equipment, yeah, that's okay, I don't need to bring it by. I said, okay. You know, his mom calls, says, look, we can't get up there, you know, we've got to go to the dentist and stuff like that. And I don't see the kid's equipment, and we get out there, and it's falling apart, and he's got blisters all over himself, and it's just ridiculous. So see the equipment, and if it's not good, tell him, you can't take this to the woods, unless you get this for it, or find something else, but I cannot let you take this into the woods. It just will not last. And if it's not going to last, don't even mess with it. There's one girl I would let go on a trip because she did not bring her equipment by, and she was not doing things I asked her to. Bring the equipment. She promised me she'd bring it and all this stuff, and I canceled her out on the trip. And her mom called me in tears, and she called the pastor. But you just got you gotta. When you're, especially in places where it could be a life and death situation, you can't compromise on it. Another thing on equipment, the tent deal, like I said, just take tarps. Unless you really need to be protected. If you're going in the winter, you need tents. If you're going someplace where those mosquitoes are real bad, you need tents. But otherwise, most of the mountains here in the east, I found the mosquitoes are not a problem. Now, when I got, it's weird, we went out backpacking in Colorado, we camped at 11,000 feet every night, and the mosquitoes were terrible. You know, and here I can sleep on the bank of the Flint River or something like that without anything. You know, here in Georgia, I don't understand it, but anyway, that's God's business. Aluminum cookware you can get for, just go up to Kmart, pick up some cheap aluminum cookware. That's all I bought to use, and it works great. You don't have to buy all this fancy stuff. What to eat, you can get it out of the grocery store. You don't have to go buy freeze-dried food unless you're taking an extended trip. But get stuff like Hamburger Helper. You can dry your own hamburger, brown it, get all the grease off of it, put it in the oven, drain it on paper towels, then put on some more paper towels, put it in the oven at about 180 degrees, real slow heat. Leave it overnight. It's all dried up. You can package it up, and it'll last for days. You take a hamburger helper and plug a hamburger in there, and there's all kinds of hamburger helpers. You can have a tuna helper, such as tuna can, you know, and all that stuff. Works great. Kansas bone chicken, you know, and just get some noodles and get some vegetable soup, a couple of soup, vegetable soup, throw it all together. There's all kind of ideas you can do on stuff out of the grocery store. When to go, avoid bad weather. Look at these weather charts you can get. Find out when all the rain is. Don't go then. Don't go when it's cold. And who can help as far as emergencies and help you with guiding and things like that. Finances, you can work that out. Safety, I mentioned this book here, Surviving the Wilderness, the Unexpected Wilderness Emergency. It's real good. Got a lot of cartoons in it. Simple, basic things you need to know, especially about like hypothermia. It's something you really need to know about before you get into the woods. On safety, get from the kids a medical history form, and you need to know things like their address, their phone number, how you get in touch with their parents, are they taking any drugs right now, are they allergic to anything? And you keep that with your first aid kit. Have it with you, because if you've got to evacuate a kid and take them to the emergency room, don't have that thing way back in your car somewhere. But have it there where you can have the information, and write the information on yourself in there too, because you know, if something happens to you, I would like to get taken care of. So put your own address, your wife's phone number, husband's phone number, whatever. Also, when you're planning a trip, as far as safety, you need to know escape routes. If we're camping tonight, somebody falls and breaks their leg, where am I going to go for help? Maybe you can go straight through the woods and find a house in 2 miles. Maybe you got to hike 4 miles back over the trail to the highway. You need to know that kind of stuff and think about it ahead of time. Take a first aid course, learn how to use a map and compass, and get these maps, and that's about all I can tell you in this amount of time. I'd really encourage you to get into wilderness travel and wilderness camping. It's the greatest thing, and can really be a ministry. It takes a lot of time and a lot of commitment on your part. I'm going to make you really enjoy it. Okay, thanks for coming.